My name is Jason Seiden. I'm with Mickey Hamlet, Lowry, Rasmussen, and Twill out of Charlottesville. I represent Diane Gaspa. It's a very narrow issue that's before the court.
I ask you what remedy you're seeking. Are you seeking this to be remanded to the trial court?
No, sir, I'm not. I think this court has established a long history of certain situations to which reversing and remanding is appropriate, and we're simply just reversing because the day in court, somebody failed to do their job. And by I don't mean to disparage by saying it, but what I'm saying is I think the Bowers case is instructive. The Bowers case was decided in 1987, and this was just as the General Assembly had enacted the equitable distribution statute. In Bowers, this court was faced with a tough decision. And in Bowers, the wife failed to prove the value of the pension. And they asked to go back and have a second day in court. But
this is an evidentiary issue.
Correct.
So when it's an evidentiary issue, if you're claiming that it's an error that's made by the court, not of a failure to establish something, then how do you avoid it being remanded to correct the evidentiary error?
Because the evidentiary error was invited by counsel. The evidentiary error was caused because the husband did not prove an element of the case. Just like the duty on the wife and
Except that once he proffers the document and the court accepts it as admissible, What then is he supposed to prove beyond that? Because if the court had sustained the objection, then he goes on with additional proof. But what do you prove once the court has accepted your piece of evidence?
He invited the error. And our duty as trial lawyers...
So offering a piece of evidence is inviting the error?
Of course. Because he hadn't laid sufficient foundation under the rules of evidence to prove, to admit that document. It's just like...
But then you're attributing knowledge of counsel, that counsel is knowingly trying to get in something they can't get in.
Counsel has a choice, Your Honor. When I raise an objection to hearsay, the counsel who's moving that piece of evidence has a choice. If the objection is overruled, then just like he mentions in his brief, what was he supposed to do? He had a choice. He could say, you know what? Maybe he's right. Maybe, you know, this is a banking record. He concedes on the brief that it's hearsay.
Do you agree that the only question that was omitted here would have been, and does this statement accurately reflect the amount of money in your retirement account at the present time?
That's one way of getting that evidence.
This is an authentication issue.
I'm glad you raised that issue, Your Honor, because I think that brings me to help me answer Judge Atlee's question, which is there's two things going on as a trial lawyer in an equitable distribution case. Our goal, our duty, is to prove a data point, which is the value of the account. The non-earning spouse has a duty, and this court has consistently reversed and not remanded when you simply don't prove an element of the case. And in this case, husband's counsel chose to try to prove that element by moving in an inadmissible document. And that is where the first objection comes in. Now, we all concede, or at least counsel concedes, and I believe that the court will agree, that it was, in fact, a hearsay document. And that under Virginia law, none of the hearsay exceptions were submitted to the court. So that document came in and as an abuse of discretion. And so at that point, counsel can say, okay, how else can I prove my case? And I outline in my brief, and I will submit to the court, that there are a number of ways to...
the concession that it wasn't admissible under any exception?
I didn't say that. I said that counsel concedes that it was a hearsay document, and then I would submit to the court. I think that none of the exceptions were proven to admit the document. Now, the contents of the record, there are a number of ways to prove when we... this is common in divorce cases, Your Honors, where we have a document and we want to prove the value of an asset. We can proceed by authenticating the document, and the document contains the necessary evidence. Or we can just try to get that evidence admitted through a request for admissions or to ask in a deposition, do you agree that this document correctly reflects the value of this asset on a particular date, or charges that you made when we try to do waste analysis? There's all kinds of ways. And the General Assembly is continually making it easier for us to do so by enacting statutes But they haven't gone so far as to say the document is just admissible if you get someone to admit that it's their document. And that is what Husband did in this case. He just asked, if you look at the point that the document was admitted to the record, I'll address the questions that occurred after the document was admitted. But the document itself, all that that counsel established, and this is on page 22 to 23 of the record, was that, let me get it in. Were you married? Did you have retirement accounts at UVA? Yes. And yes, I was married. And that you produced this document, plan breakdown, on October 1, 2015, in discovery. Yes. On that foundation, the court admitted the record, and I objected. And so now counsel has a choice when the objection comes and it's sustained. Do I rely upon counsel appealing, thinking that he's not going to appeal, or do I defend the record at trial? You can't allow us counsel to simply get the win at the trial level and then say, well, you know, if I'm right, I'm right. If I'm wrong, I'll get a second chance to make the error, especially in a hearsay issue. Because it has been common law. It is well established. Banking records are hearsay. Counsel should have known that, any counsel, when we go to do an equitable distribution trial, how can I get the evidence into the record? I need
well,
to...
Given that question, those questions and answers, yes, and given that that your client had produced that document in discovery, why couldn't Mr. Is it Hall or Hall? Hall. Why couldn't Mr. Hall believe that your client manifested adoption or belief in the truth and accuracy of that document?
Mr. Hall is welcome to believe whatever he's welcome to believe. I get along with Mr. Hall very well. We practice together.
But that being the case, that makes this a very arguable issue, not something where somebody has just blindly abandoned any search for proper rules of evidence. That's not just then trying to get a bite at the apple by capitalizing on something that you knew wasn't right.
But that's what happened, whether it was Mr. Hall's intent
or
not.
That's your position.
Yeah, that's my position, is that he tried to prove an element of the case. I think the court agrees with me that a non-owning spouse has the burden of evidentiary proof of evaluation in an equitable distribution case. The only question here is, did the court have admissible sufficient evidence to then distribute that asset? So we go to what was
and,
the...
And the court decided that it did.
The court decided it did because it admitted the document. And so we go to, did the court abuse its discretion in admitting that particular document? Because that was the only evidence of that asset.
And if it did, and that's obviously a big if, that's not Mr. Hall's fault. That's the court's error.
Correct. And this court has a duty. I assigned error to the court. I raised the objection, and I'm bringing the error to the court. And Mr. Hall, regardless of his actions, we're reviewing the actions of the trial court.
I'm not aware of any case, any domestic relations case, where we have reversed an evidentiary decision being remanded back for new trial.
Yeah.
You don't get two bites at the apple. You only get one chance to prove your case.
I agree,
Judge. It's almost like a sufficiency issue in a criminal case.
I agree, and I'm saying on the eve of trial, when we advise clients, Your Honors, we have to make decisions based upon what do we think is going to happen at trial. Do we take a settlement agreement? Do we not take a settlement agreement? And in this case, we had I have to advise a client saying, how can they prove the value of an asset.
Can I stop you there? Because you're well into your argument. We talked about the remand.
I'm sorry.
But we haven't talked about why this is inadmissible. Can you give us a citation to rules, cases, something to convince us that, A, it was inadmissible?
Sure.
That it was inadmissible, I guess.
Well, the document itself is a hearsay statement.
Based on what?
Well, I would say that it has always been generally accepted that banking records are hearsay documents. It is created by a declarant, which is the bank, and it was offered for the truth of the matter asserted. It was the sole evidentiary basis. So, and I say there is no published case that I could find where someone actually challenged whether or not a banking record was hearsay. Believe me, Your Honor, I searched the Fourth Circuit. It has just been commonly accepted through the rules. And you have rules of evidence that outline how to admit banking records and custodial records. The assumption is, well, why would you need all these rules, of course, if they're not hearsay? There is an unpublished case by this court, and I cited that in my briefs. I think that's the Jameson case. And in that case, this court overturned a conviction. Jefferson v. Commonwealth in 1995. I've attached that to my brief. This court reversed the conviction because the Commonwealth introduced the banking records. And this court said, well, they were hearsay. And you didn't produce the custodian, and you didn't otherwise admit the records and reverse the conviction. I think the hearsay issue, and you can see from the statements made by the trial court, is subject to a little confusion. The trial court seemed to treat the records differently, whether they were the wife's records or the husband's records. And I think this court really has an opportunity here to clarify. If banking records are hearsay, and there's a way to establish the admissibility of the records. There's also a way to establish the...
In order to lay the foundation here, the trial judge obviously thought had been laid, but sufficiently, but and your argument was not. You're not saying that the wife here, since these are her accounts, couldn't have said... Yeah, these are my accounts, that she says. Yeah, I've been married the whole time, so presumably it's all marital. You produced this in a discovery request in October 1st, 2015. So basically what you're saying is, you're not saying that wife couldn't have said, yes, I mean, these numbers are accurate as far as I know. I've not objected to what the bank said here.
The problem I have with that is all those questions occurred as he's asking her questions about a document that's already been admitted to the record that I objected to. So if he had asked, do you agree that these numbers are correct?
There's a difference between the wife sitting there in court testifying, using the document to either refresh your recollection or whatever.
Correct.
That's not hearsay. That's her testimony.
Correct.
I have $200 in my checking account after looking at this statement. That's not hearsay. But in this case, the amount, she never testified as to what the amount was, and she never testified as to the date. It all came from the printed page.
Correct, Your Honor.
And we wouldn't need the shopbook rule if bank records weren't hearsay.
I agree, Your Honor. They're hearsay. I think this court needs to clarify and should clarify. Of course, it's the discretion of the court how you draft an opinion. But you can see from the trial court that there is some confusion about whether or not, if you get bank statements and your name's on it and you own it, is it sufficient enough just to say, are these true and accurate copies of your bank records? No, it's not.
Why?
Because
she is testifying in court then, and she can testify. You know, you could ask her, do these refresh your recollection as to, or based on this, is this, that's in court testimony.
Correct, Your Honor, but we're talking about two different issues. We're talking about whether or not you owning a bank account is enough to establish the admissibility of the entire record versus you admitting, like you did with the credit cards, you adopted certain charges that were highlighted, and I don't bring that issue, but that's one way. That is a way that, but it just wasn't done. There is some minimal level of... I'm so sorry. I would just leave with this point, Your Honors. There is some minimal level of foundation that must be laid for a court to just simply adopt a record into evidence like a banking record. And I submit that the law clearly sets forth a multitude of ways to do it, but in this case, none were done.
Thank you, Mr. Stein. Mr. Hall?
I'm Dayton Hall. I'm here representing Mr. Gaspar. The question is pretty simple, really. If these records were admitted in error, then I lose one way or the other.
Let's start with the first problem we seem to be debating. What is your position on whether the bank records themselves constitute hearsay?
Just in the wild, I would say they're hearsay.
So is there any testimony from, in-court testimony from the wife as to what those bank records show, how much money was in those accounts?
Not before they were admitted. After the record was admitted, she testified that on page 24, line 23, this would be the earning up to October, or it's a statement dated October 1st, 2015.
But she doesn't testify as to the amount of money in the account, correct?
That's correct.
So all the amount of money in the account comes solely from the printed bank record that was introduced without any authentication or without any showing that it's a business record.
Correct. She identified it, and I would say she admitted that it was a record of her various retirement accounts that she had previously produced, and that to me was authentication, and it was to the trial court also. So the question is whether or not her testimony before...
Did she ever testify that those records were an accurate reflection of the amount of money in her account?
No. Well, I would have to go back to the page 24. This would be the earning up to October. It's a statement dated October 1st, 2015, yes, and then go on to establish they separated the next month. So obviously this was admitted by the trial court. They found that there was sufficient foundation to admit it. And it could either be admitted under the shopbook rule, or as the appellant has suggested, it could be admitted at trial. I could have asked her a lot of questions had his objection been sustained, but the objection was not sustained. And he has suggested in his reply brief that somehow I've invited error by not withdrawing the document and then asking further questions and resubmitting it, but I'm not in the habit of asking the judge to admit something and then arguing with them later on and trying to have
wouldn't
it unadmitted.
Wouldn't it have been prudent after you were alerted there might be a problem to fix the problem just by asking her, you know, did you on that date have $10,000 in your account?
Well, I thought I was doing that on page 24, but you notice from the transcript that the court took over questioning and made the ruling without my asking any further questions.
And you were referring to the court taking over where? I'm sorry.
So that would be at the bottom of page 23. When she's having a discussion with Mr. Seiden about the objection. So once he made the objection, the discussion was between the court and Mr. Seiden, and then she decided that it was admissible. And from that point forward, with the exception of asking about the amount on page 24, I didn't ask any further questions about it, really.
So you're saying your question, this would be the earning up to October, or it's a statement dated October 1st, 2015, and she says yes. Is that's where you verified that the amount in there was accurate, according to her?
Yes.
And then they separated the next month. So
yes, sir.
At that point, it's separate property, whatever accrues after that.
Yes, sir. That's my position. And again, had the judge sustained the objection, there are any other ways that I might have been able to get the same information into the record, but she did not. She overruled the objection. At that point, it was in evidence. And as I said, I'm not normally one to argue with the judge as to whether or not I should withdraw something. So the Jefferson case you mentioned, the Jefferson case was an unpublished criminal case where the account credit card holder was attempting to testify and admit the records of a transaction that he said he didn't make. Well, that's not exactly the same. You talked about not distinguishing unpublished opinions, but it's not the same as this case because we have the account holder here with knowledge of the account. They were attempting to have the account holder admit the records of a transaction that he didn't know anything about in the Jefferson case. So I'd submit that that's not exactly the same. So I would ask the court to affirm the ruling of the trial court, and if the court feels that improper foundation has been laid, then to remand it for further proceedings.
For further proceedings before the
trial court.
So you're asking for a new trial?
Either a new trial or a trial on this issue.
I mean, this would affect equitable distribution if it changes things, wouldn't it, potentially?
If all the court does is take a look at it and say you don't get any of the pension, then it's not going to affect the rest of it.
Do you have any cases we can rely on that authorize this court to remand back in a situation like this for a second do-over, a second trial?
No. No, I don't.
I guess what I'm asking is, and maybe I'm not thinking this, I'd help me think this out, both of you, but if there's an error, unless the error is harmless, would it not affect the equitable distribution of this asset, which then affects the whole ED?
Well, I don't know, because if there's no evidence as to the value of this asset, then the rest of the equitable distribution award will just stand, won't it? Because there's no evidence to balance any of the assets against.
Because this was a retirement account, you're talking about the division of those proceeds as opposed to, for example, equity in a
the
home.
The truck or the dog.
Property.
Correct. Or any other bank accounts or stocks or whatever.
Correct. So you could reverse this and just enter final judgment, and it wouldn't affect the rest of the award, because if you reversed it and found that this shouldn't have been considered, there's no other evidence of any other asset other than the ones that are otherwise divided.
But in this case, it was an award of $29,000-some. Right?
Correct.
Any further questions, Mr. Hall? You've still got some argument time. Thank you, Mr. Hall.
Thank you.
Mr. Seiden, you have your rebuttal time.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I know it's barely a minute. I would just say two things to respond to some of the concerns. First off is that any of the questioning that occurred to establish the value occurred after the improper admission of the document, meaning I had already objected to introducing the document. I hope this court's not saying that I then have to object every time a witness is asked about the document, because then they'd be reading from a document that's already in evidence. And so I would submit that would be improper to consider it. The second is, this court routinely, in cases like this is simply a failure to prove an element of the case. That's at the bones, that's what this is. I recently argued this case a couple years ago in the Anthony v. Skolnick-Lozano, where they had proven the contribution of a separate amount, but not the value. And I think it's the same. Either a failure to prove an element of the case by simply not admitting evidence is the same as failing to prove the case because the evidence you submitted was inadmissible. The end result is there was a failure to give the court sufficient admissible evidence, whether the evidence is just not there because you failed to bring a realtor, you failed to bring an appraisal, you failed to ask the person the right questions, is the same as asking them for hearsay and it being erroneously admitted. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Seiden. We will greet counsel and then this.